Welcome back to Endpoint TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, joined today by Greg Leek. Once again, Greg, welcome back to Endpoint TV.
Thanks, Ron.
Now, last time we were here, we talked about one of your really cool projects, the .NET Stock Trader, and you did some interesting comparisons against the WebSphere, was it?
Yes, it was WebSphere, and we have an update to those results now on .NET 4. When we talked, it was all .NET 3.5 bits.
Right. Okay, so the .NET Stock Trader, it's a very cool application, kind of a WCF service layer and all that.
Multi-tier, yep.
Yeah, okay. So now you've taken what you did with that project and you kind of went another step to do a kind of a different comparison. So tell me about that.
Okay, so what we wanted to compare is App Fabric just shipped, Microsoft Windows Server App Fabric,
right,
which includes both hosting services and a distributed cache service.
Right.
So what we wanted to do is take a look at how App Fabric caching services as a distributed middle-tier cache,
right,
performed against IBM's equivalent product, which is called Extreme Scale for WebSphere.
Ah, okay. Now, just for people who are like, a distributed what? You know, let's talk about App Fabric caching is, well, you tell me, what is it?
Okay, so if you think about .NET apps, mm-hmm, many people are aware that, for instance, ASP.NET has something called output caching, where,
right,
you can cache outputs of pages so it doesn't have to process them on every request.
Mm-hmm.
You can cache information, for instance, using the .NET object cache from a database,
yeah,
locally in memory with your app, so maybe it expires every 5 minutes, so instead of doing the query on every hit to the page, you do it one or two times in a 5-10 minute period,
right,
and it really improves the performance of your app.
Yeah.
However, what happens when you have multiple servers,
right,
in that scenario? Because it turns out in the old way of caching in .NET,
yeah,
every server is maintaining its own cache,
yeah,
and so it's on its own expiration cycle,
yeah,
and 4 or 5 servers in a cluster, for instance, or 10 or however many you have clustered together in your server farm, can all have different objects in their cache. They're all independently maintained.
Right.
So App Fabric caching introduces the notion of a true distributed centralized cache where you can have dedicated cache servers,
mm-hmm,
and that information then is pulled from all the servers in your farm from those dedicated cache servers so that they're all the data is always in sync with respect to your server farm.
Yeah.
And it's cool because it can also just plug in and become your ASP.NET session state provider,
right,
or it can just cache any arbitrary .NET object, for instance, you know, results from a very expensive database query or something of that nature.
Okay, so now, and of course, App Fabric Cache has a lot of cool, very rich feature set as well.
Yes.
Like it has this ability to have sort of a local cache as well as the distributed one.
Right.
Is that something you took advantage of in your
so
testing?
So both App Fabric Cache and Extreme Scale have something called a near cache.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and on the Oracle side, we'll throw in another product in the mix is Coherence. You might have heard,
right,
of Oracle Coherence,
mm-hmm,
which used to be Tang. So all those products have something called a near cache,
yeah,
and the distributed cache. And,
right,
you can either enable the near caching or disable it in all products. And the,
yeah,
near cache just means they're going to take a subset of the objects and cache them in memory with respect to your app.
Right.
So they don't even have to go across the network to the distributed cache servers,
right,
to retrieve the object. You only want to use a near cache, however, if you can stand a policy where you have some staleness between the local cache,
right,
and the distributed cache.
Yeah.
And in some apps, that's okay.
Yeah.
And you certainly would want to take advantage of it. In certain apps, you might say, no, that's not okay. I need to ensure that every cache pull is from the distributed server so that every server is getting exactly the same object.
Right.
And in this particular case, in the test that I did, we turned off near caching.
Oh, okay.
But all the code's there, so customers, if they want to redo the test on either platform and turn on near caching, they could see what those results look like as well.
So it's really the nature of the data that you have to think about when you cache something. You ask yourself, well, how bad would it be if,
right,
if I got a stale value from this and you know, a different value from this server, maybe?
Correct.
Yeah.
You have to think of it when you introduce caching to an app in simple scenarios where it's like read-only data that you know it could be 10, 20, 30 minutes or maybe even 24 hours, you know, out of sync with what's in the database. Well, those are the easy cases.
Yeah.
And that luckily probably describes about 80% of the data that we look at on the, mm-hmm, web. But when you get into scenarios where you're updating values frequently and you have transactions involved, cache policy is everything. You don't even start thinking about introducing cache until you've thought through data staleness issues. And then one other big issue, what other apps are hitting that database?
Yeah.
Because if they're not sharing the same cache, which they might not be, you might not be able to guarantee that, then you could have other apps hitting the database, changing the data behind the backing store, and then that cache on the other apps is out of sync again. So you've got to really think through the policy issues first.
One of the cool things, though, because you have this new capability, this distributed cache, so you could think of, well, if I'm going to write a value to the database from my app, I know that I could invalidate the item in the cache, write through the database, maybe put the new value. But like you said, maybe somebody else, some other app, is going in the back door, going to the database.
Right.
But I could do things like I could have a back-end service that's watching the database or using SQL cache notifications or whatever, however you want to do it. And that thing could be pushing values into the distributed cache.
Correct.
Even when my front-end stuff might not know about it.
And that's really cool with that fabric caching. There's notifications.
Yeah.
And so you can get those notifications and do invalidation. So, yeah those scenarios are all enabled, but you have to think through them. And for certain ones, you have to develop for those scenarios. If you have 6 or 7 different apps on different server farms and different data centers, but they all eventually get their data back into the same central data store, you have to think through what does it mean if I start using a cache and the cache policy.
Well, now you're the guy who over the years I've seen your work, you're the guy that's had to prove it. It's like people say, .NET can really scale. Remember in the early days, people said, well, there's no way it can scale as well as XYZ product or whatever. And so you were the guy that said, no, actually it can, and you did very rigorous tests to prove it. So you've learned a lot about what it takes to make a system scale. Now, I, on the other hand, I never have to prove anything. I just claim it. No. So, but when I talk to people who build highly scalable systems, they tell me that caching is the key to really making things scalable.
It is, because again, in any given app, usually about 80% of the data that you're looking at, you don't have to go get it from the database on every page refresh. It might be data that, like catalog data. How often does your catalog data or pricing data or something of that nature change? And if it's only changing twice a day, then why run a query against your database? Because ultimately, the reason caching is so important is it's very expensive to scale the database tier. So you can scale your middle tier out all you want. It's very easy, especially if you're stateless or with a distributed cache, to scale a middle tier out.
Right.
But if they're all going back to the same central database, well, that becomes much more difficult. Now, you can do it with, technologies like SQL Server 2008 has for partition views and things of that nature.
Yeah.
But in general, you want to reduce the load on your database server as much as possible.
Yeah, see, that was really the thing that kind of flipped a bit for me, if you will. It's like, this is not about, let me take a single request and make it faster.
Right.
Because, in some cases, it might actually be slower if you don't have a lot of load on the database.
Right.
This is about, let's take work off the database and put it into a tier where we can scale
where we can scale that tier out and have that tier handle at least a lot of the what would be just straight up queries off the database and avoid having SQL or Oracle or DB2 or whatever your backing store is having to do those queries over and over and over on every request.
Right.
Because if you think about it, say you have 10,000 concurrent users on your website and there's a page where you can have that data maybe only be refreshed every 10 minutes or 5 minutes. Maybe it's even just a minute.
Yeah.
But if you have 10,000 concurrent users and they're all hitting that page once a second or once every 5 seconds, you're literally running that query on the database thousands of times per second, maybe even tens of thousands of times per second.
Right.
And that's expensive on your disk system for your database, on the CPU for your database, even on the network.
Yeah.
So why not cache that data if you don't care that it's only changed to the user once every 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever time period you pick.
Yeah, because, some people would say, well, hey, databases got caches. You can put a lot of memory on that database server, but still it's got a network connection. It's
and
limited.
Even when you're pulling from, maybe that data is cached in SQL servers or DB2 or Oracle's local memory.
Yeah.
It still takes CPU cycles to query through relationally and look up in the cache that particular item and then, as you said, pipe it through the network and all of that. So even though it might not be hitting disk, it's still hitting CPU on your database. And that's the problem. Those CPU cycles on your database can be a very scarce resource eventually.
Ah, okay. So now the app that you built to test this out, is it a stock trader?
No,
or
no,
is it something else?
It's a simple app. It's a web based app that caches a series of objects. So,
okay.
And it's all in the paper, which we'll talk about where that you can download the paper, but all the code's there, so you can actually recreate the projects or what have you. But it's a customer, it's an order entry type scenario.
Okay.
We've got a customer object that contains address objects, an order object that contains a customer object, the order object that has then one-to-end line items in it.
So
we can vary the size of the objects getting cached.
Okay.
So it's a fairly simple scenario, easy to recreate and all the code's there. So
It's mostly as a web app. Does the web app call services then and just the web app?
The web app literally alone in both the extreme scale case, which is it's a JSP servlet app, is looking in the cache for an item. If it doesn't find the item in the cache, it goes to the database and places it in the cache. On the .NET side, it's an ASP.NET web form.
Yeah.
It does the same thing. It looks for the item in the cache. If it's not in the cache, it goes to the database, does the query, takes the object, and puts it in the cache. Now, we also have the part of the test script in the web app is remove an object.
Yeah.
So we're constantly seeing removals and inserts of items into the cache.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And now, when you have this situation of writes to the cache, you have optimistic or you have concurrency problems.
Yes.
Right? So there's optimistic and pessimistic concurrency APIs and AppFabric caching. I assume that IBM Extreme Scale has similar.
Yes. They have a rich transaction model, as does AppFabric, where we can do optimistic or pessimistic locking.
Right.
The difference is, with pessimistic, you basically obtain an exclusive lock.
Right.
And you let everything else that's trying to get that item fail right away.
Right.
So that you guarantee when you write it, you're going to be okay. With optimistic concurrency, you don't get an exclusive lock. You look for it, whether it's been changed at the database or at the cache level when you do the write.
Did you use these APIs or which ones?
Yeah, for both, we used optimistic locking, which seems to be what, in most customer scenarios, they're using optimistic locking.
Yeah, I would think that would be the default choice. Yeah. I mean, I imagine there are certain scenarios, like if I said, I'm going to update two items, and I want to know that I got the lock on both of them.
Then you want an exclusive lock right away when you do the read from the cache. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the point is AppFabric has this concurrency control that you get.
Yeah.
And you get to choose your locking strategy, and you can get lock handles and handle things gracefully with transactions within the model. So it's a very, very cool feature-wise.
Okay, so now you guys did this whole study, and you have this fancy lab where you got like all these machines, and you go. So tell me about the study. Do you have some slides you want to show?
Yeah. So let me pop right here to show you how we set up the lab for this particular test. First of all, let's think about the front end tier, the web tier that's running the web app.
Okay.
We wanted to see how, with a fixed number of cache servers for both Extreme Scale and AppFabric, how many front-end web servers they could support, how much load those two fixed cache servers could support, and then look at both the performance and the cost of the setup for those configs in both environments.
Okay.
So we varied, if you look at this diagram, we have 1 to 4 app servers.
Mm-hmm.
These are running the web app, the JSP app, web app in WebSphere in the IBM case, and the ASP.NET app on Windows Server, and .NET in the .NET AppFabric case. Then we have our two distributed cache servers, and then we have our databases.
Right.
So we're driving load with a whole bunch of client PCs that just hit the web app.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, the workload then runs on this tier to look for the item in the cache on the distributed cache servers.
Right.
If it can't find it, it'll go and hit the database, get the item from the database, and then place it in the cache.
Right.
Now, also as part of that script, we actually pull out a customer object, an address object, and then we pull out 5 random order objects, and then we remove one of those order objects at the end of the script. So it basically comes down to a fixed, I think it's about about 11-12% insert and remove mix, and about a 77% read mix.
Now, these machines are not any slouches. I mean, that's pretty substantial hardware you've got in the back end, right?
Yes, especially, the most expensive, as we said, why do you want to be able to use a cache to scale your database? The most expensive hardware is actually in the storage for the database. But, no, this is a Blade system that we're using. We're running WebSphere, in this case, also on Windows Server 2008, on the same hardware. So in all tests, the hardware is exactly the same for IBM as it is for .NET and AppFabric Windows Server caching.
Right. So nobody's going to say like, oh well, your database machine sucked. That's why this is so good.
I mean, no. This is
it's a very realistic scenario.
This is a four CPU database with more invested in the storage.
Right.
And again, you could say, well, we could have scaled the database. We could have scaled any of these tiers, but we wanted to kind of keep it fairly realistic to what could be an enterprise app all the way down to a kind of a mid-sized work group level app.
Okay. So cool. So what else do you have?
Okay, so let's take a look at results. Now, first of all, hang on a second. Let's go back to this. Let's talk about cache replication. One of the other important things with app fabric caching, as well as with extreme scale caching, is you can boot up as many cache servers as you want and scale your solution out.
Right.
What's actually happening is each server is storing only a subset of the data. It's not that every server is storing everything.
Right.
And then automatically there's routing that happens so that it'll find, when you look something up like by the cache key, it'll go to the server that actually has that data and retrieve it and pull it back to the client.
Right.
But one of the, so then the next question is, well, what happens if one of your cache servers fails?
Yeah.
You've just lost, if you've got two cache servers, like in this scenario, you just lost 50% of your data, theoretically, right?
Right.
50% on one, 50% of the data on the other server. Well, there's this cool feature called cache replicas or cache replication, both for AppFabric and Windows Server, as well as for Extreme Scale, where they also can store a backup copy and mirror that on another server.
And we should point out that this requires Windows Server Enterprise Edition.
Yes, the cache hosting of AppFabric does require Windows Server Enterprise
Edition. Just for that feature, though. Everything else you get in any version of Windows Server, but just that feature is Enterprise.
I believe that if you know that to be true,
I guarantee it.
All right, then I'll trust you on that. In my scenario, we wanted to test cache replication as well as non-replication.
Okay.
Because obviously you'll pay somewhat of a performance penalty for replicating data across other cache servers.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's a lot safer because if a cache server goes down, what happens is transparently behind the scenes, then all the whole AppFabric infrastructure knows to go get the mirrored replica copy of that data and then to re-replicate that across other servers. So it's a very, very cool feature, and we wanted to see how that failover scenario performed compared to just straight up, divvy the data up across servers and pull it.
And of course, we should point out that, I mean, when you say, like, if a cache server goes down, we lose the data. Well, it's true we lose it out of the cache.
But not the database.
But you probably have it in the database.
Correct.
So maybe it's not that big of a deal if one goes down. And, over time the system would recache things,
Depending on how you've designed your system. But you might think of one scenario, which is session state for ASP.NET, where you're not actually storing that data in any database.
Right.
You're
using those.
Then you would lose that subset of sessions and some subset of your users, in this case, 50%. Would come back and their shopping cart would be, or whatever, would be empty and they'd have to go reshop, which might not be an ideal scenario. Once your customer has something in their shopping cart, you probably want them to go and check out and buy it. So that's just one example where maybe you're not actually backing the data in a database, you're just storing it in the cache.
Could be.
Because it's
transient
until they check out and then it's all gone anyway.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, so let's take a look. This is with the cache failover. So we're still using two servers.
Right.
One server is going to store half the data and a mirror of the other half of the data.
Right.
And ditto for the second server. So if any server fails, your system is still up and running. Your cluster still has all the data cached.
Okay.
And we can see that Windows Server AppFabric caching is the purple line, the top line. As we scale from one app server node all the way to four app server nodes, it actually outperforms IBM Extreme Scale in this scenario by about, I think it's about 15% if you do the math on this.
This says failover, but that doesn't mean that you did a failover during the test.
It means we have the cache.
You just have it enabled.
We have it enabled so that if one server failed, we do have a mirrored copy of the data.
Okay.
For instance, when that happens, there's a little bit of overhead, right? Because you push an item into the cache. It has to be put into that local cache, and then that server then has to find its mirrored copy, another server, and push that same item into the mirrored copy's cache, so that you have it available on both servers.
Right.
And in the WebSphere case, well, you might ask, well, why are there four lines? Okay, if we look at just the top two lines, this is the best performing IBM tuning setting, which is a mode called copy to bytes.
Okay.
And that has to do with how extreme scale serializes the object.
Ah.
And they're using just a straight byte array to serialize objects for network transport.
Right.
And that turns out in this test to be the much more performant scenario for extreme scale than their standard default setting, which is copy on read and commit, which uses Java class serialization. And you can see that's quite a bit slower. If we look at copy on read and commit, the blue line, that's all the way down here.
Right.
Quite a bit slower to use that. So copy to bytes is a much better mode. Now, I should also add, we spent probably about 2 to 3 months tuning both WebSeer and Extreme Scale according to all the IBM best practices.
Okay.
And all those tuning settings are detailed in the paper. Thread pools for the Orb, thread pools for WebSeer, thread pools for the container, database connections, all that's extremely fine-tuned in these tests. And they're all detailed in exquisite detail in the 75-page paper.
So take your best shot, right?
Take your best shot replicate the tests in here. We always encourage customers to do their own testing, for instance, on their own hardware setup or what have you. But the other interesting thing is we compared to no caching. So Microsoft.net without any caching is this light blue line.
Yeah.
And you can see from one server to four servers, the no caching not only... is it flatlined? Is it database
it goes down.
It goes down.
Yeah, this is amazing to me, and
as it does for extreme scale and WebSeer.
Yeah, and so you know what this tells me is that it's like a lot of people say, "Oh, well, the website's running a little slow. Let's add another web server to the cluster."
Right.
Bad idea.
Bad idea. You got to know what your bottleneck. That would be a great idea if your bottleneck was the web server.
Right.
But in the no caching scenario, the bottleneck is our database. So we're, you know, as soon as we have one web server in the cluster, we're already at 100% CPU utilization on our database.
Yeah.
And adding more middle tier servers isn't going to make it any better. Now you might ask, well, why does it get worse?
Yeah.
Well, think about every web server in your farm is going to open up some number of minimum connections to the database, thus allowing you to even more flood an already overloaded database, and that database is going to have to maintain more in-memory connections to each server in the farm.
Right.
And that's why you see it slightly degrading even as you add more servers to the farm, because the databases are already completely throttled and you're just adding more connections for each server you
have. What this says to me is like... Even to the person who says, well, I'm just going to go .NET, so I really don't care about the comparison to IBM.
Right.
But if you just compare, like, no cache to cache, you see this huge difference.
Huge difference. In fact, where we are, we're about 1,800 TPS max. Well, let's even give them credit for one web. 2,200 versus over 30, it looks like about 3,600, 3,700 TPS.
Yeah.
Scaling all the way out. And then you'll see this line tails off, right?
Yeah.
Again, we designed this with two fixed cache servers.
Right.
How would you get this to go up even further as we add a fourth and maybe fifth and sixth node? Well, we would actually start scaling out the cache tier.
Right.
And instead of having a fixed two cache servers, we'd add a third and maybe a fourth cache server, and we would get even more scalability out of this system.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's important to keep in mind. We've on purpose designed this to have two fixed cache servers.
Right.
So we can measure at two fixed cache servers how much throughput does that give you for both extreme scale and app fabric. So we can look at the efficiency of both.
Right.
But for both solutions, we could add more cache servers and have both of these lines for extreme scale and app fabric scale additionally.
And what's cool about this system is that you could add another cache server without bringing the system down or restarting or anything. You could have your test running and just hammering on this thing and say, add another one, and it just goes.
Yes, and those scenarios are all possible, although when you add another one, depending on the modes you're running in and everything, you do have to realize that the data might not be partitioned and load balanced if it's already been loaded.
Yeah.
So there are some issues that customers need to think through.
Right.
But that's absolutely a possibility.
Okay, what else you got?
Okay, so let's, this is comparing, you know, I mentioned that there's this replication mode and the non-replication mode. And so we did test, the full paper has the results for when you're not replicating the cache.
Right.
So you don't have failover across those cache servers.
Right, right.
But I wanted just to show here, well, what's the perf trade-off for turning on the replication feature versus keeping the replication feature turned off.
Okay.
And you can see there is a perf trade-off. You get, you know, slightly lower, probably about, what, 30%, 25% lower throughput when you have cache replication turned on versus having no cache replication. But keep in mind, that might be well worth that expense because now you have you have failover and safety on your cache tier.
And it's the kind of thing that you can selectively enable. So you could say, like, I have this cache without the failover and this one with it.
Correct.
And so you only put the things in the one that you really need it with.
That is correct. For both Windows Server App Fabric and Extreme Scale on the IBM side, you can create separate caches.
Yeah.
And then you have different tuning and different configuration settings for each cache. So you could certainly do that.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
Okay. So then finally, this slide's probably a little hard to read, but again, all the data's in the paper. I wanted to look at cost because I'm a big believer in performance numbers are great, but some of the hardware that some of these benchmarks are run on is just completely unrealistic.
Oh,
so number one,
in
my lab, I've got very realistic hardware that an enterprise might be using. It's not like a $50 million setup or anything like that.
Yeah.
But you do have to look at both the hardware cost, which in this case is fixed for IBM. It's the same for IBM and for App Fabric because we're running on exactly the same hardware.
Right.
But now let's look at the software licensing costs.
Right, right.
And that's where there's a big difference with App Fabric. You know, the performance is as good or better.
Right.
But the cost differential is, it can be substantial. IBM licenses on a PVU, processor value unit basis.
Okay.
And it turns out the cost of their setup, if you look at all four app server nodes running WebSphere and two distributed cache servers, just the software cost for those six servers is $115,000.
Wow.
$115,000 because you're buying WebSphere separately, and it's a very expensive product, and you're licensing two copies of Extreme Scale separately, and that's a very expensive product. All the pricing is broken out in the full paper, but it turns out just the software is $115,000 using MSRP, manufacturer suggested retail pricing.
Okay.
If you look at the .NET side, it's about 25% of that cost at $24,000.
Right.
And that's because App Fabric, if you've got Windows Server Enterprise, you already have App Fabric. It's free download on MSDN.
Right.
You already have, with any edition of Windows Server, you already have .NET Framework 4 with ASP.NET and our web engine, IIS. All those technologies are just integrated into Windows Server operating system.
Yeah.
You're not paying separate. So there can be a huge cost advantage as well to building on the .NET framework and technologies like App Fabric.
And in fact, if you said, well, I don't want to use the high availability feature, so then you could use Windows Server Standard Edition. App Fabric's included without everything except for that feature. Then it would be even less.
Then it would be even less. Exactly. So in these pricing models, we broke out the pricing. We do, obviously, on our cache servers run Windows Server Enterprise. But in the IBM Extreme Scale case, they can run on standard. But the cost of, I think the cost of scaling up one node for Extreme Scale is about $11,000.
Wow.
So it's an App Fabric, I mean, Extreme Scale on the IBM side is a very expensive product.
If you just look at the cost per TPS.
The price per metric.
It's dramatically different.
Dramatically different. And this shocks some customers.
Yeah.
Because it's shocking to customers that are running WebSphere. And my theory here is that most of WebSphere costs are probably buried in some large contract somewhere. So I don't think customers or developers or architects or even CIOs really understand what they're paying in terms of software licensing costs to IBM to run WebSphere and technologies like Extreme Scale versus using .NET integrated into Windows Server. So I, of course, want to highlight that difference.
Okay, we got time for one more thing.
One more thing. Okay.
Okay.
So that's an overview of the App Fabric results. And if you want to check them out, the best place to go is my blog.
Okay.
We'll
have a link.
We'll have a link at the end. Okay, excellent. We did one other set of tests. We updated the stock trader results for the .NET Framework 4.0 because we just shipped the 4.0 framework in, what was it, May.
Right.
So they're now all those results are now updated. And I just wanted to show you those results really quickly. Let's go right here. And what we did here was a little bit different. We actually had tested on an IBM Power server running AIX, an 8-core server, so a scale-up scenario with a very powerful IBM mid-tier, what they'd call mid-tier or enterprise-class server, running the StockTrader app versus running the WebSphere app on Windows Server scaled out across four blades versus running the .NET implementation of StockTrader on 4 scaled out blades.
Yeah.
And again, here I want to point out not just the perf advantages to .NET. If we take a look at the web tests, you can see both WebSphere on Windows and .NET on Windows perform about the same.
Right.
But there is a price differential because of the licensing costs of WebSphere that's fairly significant.
Mm-hmm.
But then we look at what it costs when you throw that same app on the IBM Power platform with a Power 570 server, and you're looking at $260,000, because this is including
wow.
the hardware cost.
That's like five times as much.
Five times as much compared to running either the Windows WebSphere on Windows on the
yeah.
on the HP, this is Hewlett Packard Blade system,
yeah.
versus even lower for .NET on the same HP Blade system, because there's less software licensing costs involved. So this is can be dramatic differences in the platform you choose, and I hate to see customers, quote unquote, waste money on buying some large, vertically scaled system.
Right.
For instance, an IBM Power 570 box, or maybe it's an IBM mainframe or something of that nature, when they could actually get better performance
yeah.
and dramatically lower their costs by going with a scale-out approach on something like HP Blades running Windows Server 2008.
Well, and this big expensive box got 8,000 TPS versus 11,000.
Versus the 4 blades, and the 4 blades are at a fraction of the cost of that huge scale-up box.
Wow.
And so, again, I hate to see customers waste money. So the great thing about this benchmark, it's packaged up with a kit
yeah.
that customers can download a test tool,
yeah.
and they can deploy the WebSphere, the Java code and all that ships with the kit.
Yeah.
They can deploy the WebSphere workload, or any workload, to a mainframe or a Power 570 AIX box, whatever it is,
right.
And actually do this test on their own hardware platforms and see what performance they get on their, you know, on their IBM hardware
yeah.
versus the performance they might get running Windows Server on
cool.
Intel or AMD platform from Hewlett Packard,
yeah.
and look at those performance and cost differentials and make a kind of a more informed decision about their platform, even if they're going to stick with WebSphere.
Because yeah.
running WebSphere on Windows Server is a lot less expensive, potentially, and maybe
yeah.
even more performant, as in this case, than running WebSphere on a vertically scaled system like a PowerBox.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, Greg, for
yep.
coming.
I appreciate it.
We'll see you next time on Endpoint TV.
Cool.